Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having just a great day, getting you ready for a great Thanksgiving weekend, hopefully with your friends, with your family, or just with Friendsgiving. I don't know why we had to make it Friendsgiving. There was no family word in Thanksgiving before, but whatever. Alas, here we are, and we got hoops to talk about. We got college football to talk about, and we have a lot of NFL to talk about. Cowboys survived and look like they're putting themselves in position to make the playoffs in the NFC East, and one reason is because the Eagles, heavy is the head that wears a crown, right? Guess they're not having that much fun with all the losing this year. Remember that? Remember Lane Johnson? And, oh, we just have more fun here than New England. Look at the two teams now. And then, of course, you have the Washington Redskins, who lost Alex Smith. And it is remarkable history with Alex Smith breaking his ankle yesterday. It's gross. I've told you before I'm a number three. If you don't know what number one, number two, number three is, here's the quick breakdown. Number one is, I don't want to see it. You may have told me a guy got hurt, but I don't want to see it. You can just tell me about it. Verbally confirm that there was an injury. You can even describe it. I don't want to see it. Type two, I want to see it once. Let me just check it out once so I know what everybody's talking about. Type three is, oh, that's gross. Can I see it again? Can I see it again? Can I see it again? It's three types of people in this world. I am type three. So I'm not squeamish. I've seen Alex Smith break his leg, break his ankle. It was gross. I've watched enough sports now to know that Gordon Hayward, though still tentative, is back. Paul George, though he was tentative his first year back, is a max contract guy. So you can come back from it. But inevitably what happens is as soon as a player gets hurt at quarterback in the National Football League, as soon as it happens, people say something that they just can't let go of. This is what happens. Alex Smith goes down with an injury, and immediately they say, Colin Kaepernick, he would be amazing. He would be incredible. Like, okay. Well, here's the thing. You're going to have to let the Kaepernick thing go. It's just not going to happen. Though writers, though tweeters, people get on the bird and they want to relate it somehow to the protest and the controversy which has ensued. The fact is that in football, and frankly in business, when you have a short-term job, you go with what you know, even if it's not the best possible option out there. Now, the first thing about Kaepernick is, let's not kid ourselves, it's been several years since he was any good in the NFL. In terms of his actual skill, he's had multiple surgeries since, he's had multiple opportunities since, and he has not recaptured the luster of the career gone. But even that doesn't matter. That's getting caught up in the weeds. The first thing is that Mark Sanchez is going to sign there, and you may think of Sanchez as the butt fumble. You may think that Sanchez isn't a great quarterback, or isn't even a good quarterback. And there are parts of me that will agree with you. I'll also tell you that whatever you want to say about Kaepernick's career and his rise, and though he was way more productive and dominant at for a period of time, did he win four road playoff games in his career? He didn't. But the reason that Mark Sanchez is going to sign with the Redskins is he knows the system. He's worked with people in the system before. Colin Kaepernick doesn't. Colin Kaepernick hasn't been in the league. The job of the backup quarterback is not just to, if he plays, be the best option at quarterback. Can you be the best option for that team? And, oh, yeah, by the way, that's worst case scenario. If your starter gets hurt, Colt McCoy is the starter. The job of the backup is to get the starter ready. And you can't get the starter ready if you don't know the offense yourself. I've talked to several quarterback people within the league, offense coordinators, quarterback coaches, and they all say the same thing. Familiarity is the most important thing. The most important thing in playing quarterback. Familiarity. It's one of the things that's irritating Aaron Rodgers. Forget about the fact he doesn't love their offense. He has had guys, some of these younger wide receivers, that don't know what they're doing or where they're supposed to be, or where they're lined up. Aaron Rodgers knows the offense like the back of his hand. He knows exactly where guys are supposed to be and where they're not supposed to be. So you're just going to have to let it go. Regardless of the fact that Kaepernick has no ties to the Washington Redskins coaching staff, which makes it not even a phone call they would make. Regardless of the fact that there's the politics of it, suing the league, which hasn't stopped Eric Reed from getting a job. The truth to it is, it's one of those things that is so far gone that you're going to have to stop asking about it, writing about it, tweeting about it. It's over. It's like, how long, what is the statute of limitations on the Seahawks or Seahawks fans talking about if they should have given, if they would have given the ball to Marshawn Lynch? Well, you know, if we would have given the ball to Marshawn Lynch, it's just, you know, the same exact year, a game before, the Green Bay Packers are thinking, you know, had we recovered an onside kick, we would have beaten the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And you could say, well, yeah, you would have had to play the Patriots in the Super Bowl and go, that's fine. You get like 6 months to be mad in the offseason. And then if you fail in the next season, you can't draw upon, well, we didn't give Marshawn Lynch the football. But they have, and they didn't get over it. Just like the Kaepernick truthers in their own mind can't get over that he's not in the league. I'm not going to dwell upon the fact that he was pulled as a starter because he wasn't personable and he wasn't ingratiating himself to his teammates. Forget about the fact that he showed his limitations in scrambling too often and only to his right and having small hands and having trouble changing arm angles and reading a defense. Forget about all that. Just the idea of, hey, once you've been in the league for a couple years and nobody's calling, it's over. Look, I'm willing to say it's over with Tony Romo, who was a better quarterback for a longer period of time with the Dallas Cowboys. But once he did a year in the booth with CBS, like, it was over. Now he's a year and a half in. That's a wrap, kids. This is like election guy. Well, you know, the Russians and they. I'm not saying you can't investigate how whatever happened. Just like if you're Colin Kaepernick, you want to investigate whether or not people colluded to keep you out of the league. That's fine. But the second Alex Smith goes down, you go like, wow, Kaepernick, they're not bringing him in. It's over. Once you say it, you've gone to crazy town, and anybody with a brain just stops listening to you. Just like if you want to bring up anything Seattle does now, you're like, well, if they give it to Marshawn Lynch, it's over. It's been over for a long time. You're that guy. You're a Laker fan that says, you know, if David Stern would have let us have Chris Paul, we would have, like, Kobe would have had, like, 11 billion rings. It's over! There's nothing worse than the guy that can't get over the girl. She took the kids and she left. It's been a year. Divorce is finalized. It's over. She's not coming back. She's got another guy living in the house, dude. Now, it means you don't want them to call him dad. So figure it out. Get yourself together. Get back to work. Show up when you're supposed to show up. Be a parent and have a life. But we get caught up in these things. We get caught up in things. Political things. You get fired from a job and you had a bad boss and you want to bitch and complain. Like, dude, Kaepernickers, you have to have a next play mentality because you are worrying about a play that is several years old. It's been since 2015. That was when he was last good. It's about to be 2019. I don't know what the... I don't know how long you're supposed to be allowed, the statute of limitations is, but I'm going to tell you, it has run out on the Kaepernick discussion. Alex Smith is a good quarterback. There's nothing great about him, but he's good. He's solid. He's a really good regular season quarterback. And Colt McCoy, who was once upon a time a starter. Colt McCoy, who was, remember his arm went dead in the national championship game? Like, I never thought he would be great, but he has all the intangibles, all the relatability, and all of the knowledge of that offense. In addition to the personal quirks and not playing football and not knowing the offense and putting it, trying to sign a guy at midseason. It's just not going to happen. Just not. It's not colluding when the league has agreed his time has passed. Right? Ray Rice's time has passed. Terrell Owens' time has passed for varying a myriad of reasons. But when a wide receiver goes down, if you say you should bring in T.O., I stop listening to you. When a running back goes down, if you think they should bring in Ray Rice, I stop listening to you. And when a quarterback goes down, if you believe they should bring in Colin Kaepernick, I stop listening to you. It's not because they weren't good. It's just because whatever window of opportunity they had to play in the National Football League, which also stands for not for long, that window is closed. And when you keep bringing it up, you keep bringing it up, we all stop listening to you because you've gone to crazy town.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He's a three-time Super Bowl champion. He's a radio legend nationally and locally. He's also an analyst for the NFL on Fox. He's three-time Super Bowl champion, Mark Schlereth. He joins us on Fox Sports Radio. Stink, let's start with the Broncos, huh? I mean, I'd love to talk about the Broncos and their win, but I cannot believe what I saw from Phillip Rivers. Like, I mean, how are you that experienced having the season of your life, or since they did have the 14-2 season, and you make those type of decisions down the stretch?
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine, Dougie. I mean, that is one that you look at and you're like, dude, what are you, I mean, take a sack and eat up 40 seconds. Yeah, I mean, you're going to punt it anyway and pin them down deep. That 40 seconds, obviously, pivotal. But how you don't go through those, it's almost like Little League. You know, I coached my son in Little League forever, and we always told our kids when they were little, like, okay, if the balls hit to you, you have to think about this every play. If the balls hit to you, what are you going to do with it? You know, situational baseball, that's situational football. You're like, you throw that only if it's wide open, and it's just, you know, if not, just self-sack, take the sack. I mean, it's something you discuss before you call it. I mean, it came out of a timeout. It's something that you discuss. How do you have that kind of lapse of reason, especially for Phillip Rivers? That's an inexcusable mistake for him. And, you know, frankly, I mean, there are so many things that cost them that game. But late, obviously, you know that's the one that everybody's going to be talking about.
And a game that, you know, they made so many mistakes they probably deserve to lose. Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Let's get to the Bears. Obviously, their defense is awesome. And, you know, every coach talks about starting fast. And really, that's kind of their secret, right? Start fast and unleash their pass rush on you and hope they don't have to depend on Mitch Trubisky to throw the football deep down, you know, push the ball down the field late. Is this a recipe that wins in the postseason because it's winning right now?
Well, I always think anytime you can control the line of scrimmage, you can run the football, especially if it gets into nasty weather, you get a couple of home games. Like, do I think you're going to go to New Orleans with that philosophical approach and beat New Orleans? No, I don't. But if you get a home game, I think you're going to be able to advance in a home game. You know, they always talk about what travels on the road in the playoffs, and that's defending the run and running the football, controlling the line of scrimmage. You do that more often than not, and you're going to come away victorious even if your quarterback has 165 yards throwing. You know, Mitch Trubisky is unique in that he scrambles around. I think he leads the league from quarterback position in rushing, makes good throws on the move. He had that touchdown I think to Anthony Miller on the move, on a scramble, when he got outside the pocket. Matt Nagy does a great job of giving him those opportunities, getting him in that kind of rhythm where he is both a run threat and a pass threat. But do I think you're going to beat an upper echelon team, you know, on the road like New Orleans? No, I don't. But I think it gives you, as a football team, with the quarterback that you're currently grooming and teaching, the best chance to win. Yeah, I do. So I don't have a problem with the way they're playing football right now.
What's the matter with the Vikings?
Listen, man, I tell you what, chemistry's funny, isn't it? It's a funny thing. You know, you think, it's like the whole thing with the Eagles. You think just because you had it last year, you change a couple of pivotal pieces and it's going to, you know, it's going to, you know, all of a sudden reemerge. Defensively, they're just not playing like they did last year in their secondary. Their secondary has given up big plays. They have, you know, their secondary has not played the kind of man coverage that they played last year, so guys escape. So that has happened to them. Obviously, you know, you look at their pass rush and their ability to rush the passer has always been really good. But I think from a coverage standpoint, both the second level, the linebacking level, and the secondary has given up big plays. That second level, that linebacking level, you remember back to that Thursday night game on Fox where they played the Rams and they matched up Anthony Barr like three different times with a running back or a receiver and absolutely torched them. They have found themselves in those positions, and they found themselves losing more often than not when they get into those positions.
Mark Schlereth joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. How have the Saints managed to make Drew Brees look even better at 39?
Listen, one, like, I was out there this summer. I went out to Saints camp, and Sean Payton and I, you know, name-dropping, happened to be friends, and I was out there for one of my son's minor league baseball games. So I spent the day at training camp, was invited to, you know, to help out, to be in offensive line meeting rooms, to do some coaching, you know, to be out there at practice, to watch the film with those guys. And, one, they are so dynamic, and they are so multiple. You know, like, you talk about all the different guys that are able to get involved, from Kamara to Ingram to you know, Thomas, to all their wide receivers. And, like, everybody's getting their opportunities. Tight ends. Drew Brees does such a great job of spreading it around. But they are, by far, when you watch them on film, on tape, they are the best offensive line in football, doing multiple things well, not only running the ball, but also in pass protection. And, you know, you look at the backup quarterback, Hill, who I saw him the other day. I broke down one of their games. He lined up at kick returner. He lined up at fullback. He lined up at running back. He lined up at tight end, both on the line of scrimmage and in the slot. And he lined up at wide receiver outside and at quarterback and was effective. He is, let me tell you, he is what Tim Tebow wanted to be, or what people wanted Tim Tebow to be, but Tim Tebow didn't want to be that. And he's a much better athlete. I mean, he is one of the real unsung heroes of this Saints team. And then the other hero is Drew Brees, because Drew Brees, when they ask him to motion out and play wide receiver, he doesn't throw a hissy fit like Flacco does. He's like, great, this is going to help our team win. I'm in, because I'm at a point at 39 where I just want to win a championship. They are so balanced, and they have so many different people involved. It is absolutely amazing. As a matter of fact, Dez Bryant goes down with the injury, and everybody's sad, and they pull a kid up off the practice squad, number 18. I've never even seen him before. And he catches one from 43 yards down the seam. I'm just like, just bring another guy in. We're good.
Yeah, no, it's really, really amazing how they can just find a mismatch, and then Drew is so deadly accurate. Okay, help me out with Lamar Jackson. First drive doesn't throw a pass. Now, it was effective in the short term, but it feels like they're hiding the fact that he can't, you know, do the real quarterback thing. Can you learn that on the fly, or is this just, hey, let's just kind of keep it together and see how, do the Tebow thing and see if we can win by shortening the game and making our quarterback run?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think one, like, you're going to do what's best for him, and you're going to give him the most opportunities to be as comfortable as possible. But in the long run, does that work? Absolutely not. I mean, you're not gonna go deep. You know, you're not gonna be a playoff team doing that. So you know, it's not a sustainable form, Doug. I mean, it just isn't. How many yards do you have? 100 over 100 yards rushing? Is that right?
27 carries.
27, like 26. Come on, dude. Seriously. Let me tell you. I picked up the ball. First, I gave up a sack my rookie year. I played center my whole rookie year. So, or not my whole rookie year, but the training camp of my rookie year. So, I get done playing center, and the Redskins throw me in at guard and say, hey, you know, go block Al Noga. Like, I hadn't taken one snap at guard the whole preseason. Al Noga blew behind me like I was standing still. I didn't even touch him. And Bill Kenny was our backup quarterback. Bill Kenny got hit right in the teeth, right? Ball popped up in the air. I caught it. And I was covering kickoffs at the time. So, like, I could run. I was like 280, 4'7 guy. You know, I mean, I could flat run. I picked up that ball, snatched it right out of the air. I thought I was going to score, Dougie. I thought I was going 45 for a touchdown. I was going to be a hero. I took three steps, and Mike Merriweather, I swear to God, he came off the sideline and hit me in the lips. And I mean, I blacked out. Snot shot out of both nostrils. The only reason I didn't fumble, because I let the ball go, about three DBs hit me in the chest at the same time. And I was laying on the bottom of that pile, and I was just kind of like, literally, note to self, when I came to, I was kind of like, don't ever pick up the ball again. Like, I'm telling you what, this kid is phenomenal. I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete. But if you let him run the ball 27 times, eventually he'll catch one of the teeth, and then he'll be done. So, yeah. I mean, they're going to have to change that style. Even Cam Newton, you know, design runs about 11 a game. Tops, you know, top with design runs, excuse me, probably eight with like three or four scrambles, like 12 carries. You cannot let your quarterback run 27 times in today's NFL because somebody is going to shorten that kid's neck.
Okay, this is an honest question. I think we all want to say we're go for it guy, go for two guy. The Panthers lose the game by going for two in Detroit. And we've seen that the Titans lost a game going for two when they didn't have to in London. The Colts went for it on fourth down at their own 43-yard line, which I thought really helped change the Texans' entire season, their entire trajectory. And, oh, yeah, by the way, look at it now. Had they tied that game, which is what would have happened, they just punted, we'd be in a completely different place in terms of the standings in that division. How did we get to this place where coaches are cool, just like, yeah, you know, we'll fight all week long to try and win a game. And even when, my thing is, if you're the better team, you want the game to go longer. That's, I'm Carolina. I want the game to go longer. I'm going to get the ball back. I'm the better team than Detroit. What are we doing with this go for two to try and win the game and get off the field thing?
Right? I mean, we are such a, like our league, such prisoners in the moment. It's incredible how we get to the point where it's like, well, the Eagles won a Super Bowl, and, you know, it's Riverboat Ron, so he's done it in the past. But, like, I don't know what book you're looking at, but you kick that extra point, and you play for overtime 100% of the time. It's like when Mike McCarthy came out after the loss to Seattle on Thursday night and says, hey, you know, I was going by the numbers, and that's why we punted. And let Seattle have the ball, who had, you know, 160 yards rushing or whatever, and were physically dominating the line of scrimmage. Like, we're going by the numbers. And I'm thinking to myself, the only number you need to be thinking about is number 12. And how are you going to give that guy opportunities? Fourth down and two, number 12 should go for it, right? That's the number I would be banking on. But the whole thing, it seems to be flipped on its head. In regards to Carolina, you kick that extra point, you make it a tie game, and you're right. We're the better team. We're going to beat Detroit in their place.
Awesome stuff, Stank. Awesome, awesome stuff. Hey, man, really appreciate you joining us. Look forward to talking in the very near future.
All right, Doug. Take care, buddy.
The one and only Mark Schlereth joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Let's play this back. You tell me, I feel like it's almost like Ron Rivera believes that the old overtime system is in play. Go ahead, take a listen.
Well, I think you go for two on the road to win the game at the end of the day. What's to say the coin toss is going to go in our favor? What's to tell you we're going to slap them? So why not go for two? Well, you missed a couple kicks. I mean, that's all part of it. When I was going for the win, that's just the bottom line.
That's just the bottom line. I was going for the win. you know you can still win the game. So here's the if he did in fact, and I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, if he did in fact realize that the new overtime rules, which the overtime rules in the NFL are beyond stupid. All right, here's the thing. You can't win on a field goal except when you can. Right? The only people that can't, the only time you can't win on a field goal is if you get the first possession of overtime. Any other possession, you can win on a field goal. Does that make sense? It makes no sense at all. So I'm somebody who believes that the overtime rule should just be put a clock up and let's just play football. But it felt like Ron Rivera was like, well, you know, if we can't stop them, well, you can't stop them from scoring a touchdown or can't stop them like the old rules and keeping out of the end zone. The Lions had only scored two touchdowns the entire day. It's not like they're mopping the field up, right? Matt Stafford was 23 of 37. Kerryon Johnson had 87 yards rushing. If your feelings were you couldn't stop them, one, you got a 50-50 shot of winning the coin toss. Two, even if you don't win the coin toss, you can hold them to at maximum, you can hold them to a field goal. The Detroit Lions had 11 first downs the entire day. 11. And only two of them were via the pass. 11 first downs the entire day. So they had 11 drives. That's an average of one first down per drive. That's not great. They'd only average 5.7 yards per pass, far less than the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers were better in almost every statistical category. Better in the red zone. They were better on third down. They're 5 of 11 on third down, as opposed to 4 of 12 with the Detroit Lions. They had one pick thrown by Cam. That's really the only difference in the game. And yes, the Lions had more rush yards, 94 to 56. But part of that is Cam took three sacks. That lost them 26 yards. Otherwise, it's essentially a wash. The Carolina Panthers, would anybody argue they're the better team than the Detroit Lions? Nobody would argue it. So why would you try and shorten it and cheapen it and go with one play? Doesn't make any sense. Doesn't make any sense. It's just become the cool thing to do. Right? Become the cool thing to do. Like when Mark Helfrich did it, and he was the coach at Oregon, he did it because it was the smart thing to do, and he kept doing it. Now, one of the things that some of these guys don't understand is they believe, like compound interest is. You guys watch Hard Knocks, right? Compound interest. They think there's compound risk and lessened risk based upon how many times you go for it. Like the idea is, well, if you convert, more than 50%, 51% of the time, well, as opposed to now you're only converting 1 point extra points, like 92, 93% of the time. So if you convert at a rate of over 50%, then that's a smarter play than going for one. The problem with football coaches is, I believe, many of them think, well, if I didn't get it this time, that means I have a greater chance of getting it next time. No, you don't. You got a 50% chance of getting the first time. You got a 50% chance of getting the second time. And if you didn't get it the first time, that doesn't mean a 75% chance the second time. It's the exact same probability. But this is where it's become the cool thing to do.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Let's bring in Michael Lombardi. He joins us every week and teaches us about football. So much to learn from you this week, Michael. By the way, the book is out, Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building dynasties in the NFL. Plus, he has GM Street, his widely well-regarded podcast, which comes out every week. Let's start with the Saints. We're supposed to be watching the best two teams in football, but the Saints have beaten one of them, and they seem to be getting better, not getting worse. Are the Saints, in fact, the best team in football?
Well, I mean, right now, after week 11, you'd have to say without a doubt they are. I mean, they've had a tough schedule. They play Baltimore on the road, tough place to play against a good defense, win that game. Obviously, Justin Tucker misses an extra point, go into Minnesota, Drew Brees throws for 120 yards, yet they still win the game. And then last night, they just pummeled the defending Super Bowl champions. It wasn't a game. I mean, it was 17-7 at 3rd-and-2, and for whatever reason, the Eagles decided to run a play that I'm not sure they would like to run again, and the next thing you know, that score was 31-7. Game was over.
All right, let's get to the Eagles. Is this fixable? Because it's still a division which they could find a way to win. Is it fixable?
You know, last year I said all year that the Eagles were winning because they played from in front. Now everybody says, you know, Lombardi, that's really a revolutionary statement. Playing from in front's important. No, it's really important. I mean, the teams that have the first-time halftime lead point differential always go to the Super Bowl. Last year it was Philadelphia and New England. Last year the Eagles were the number one team in first-quarter points scored, and they were the first best team in first-quarter point differential. They always played from in front. And this year, they can't play from in front. Their script's not working. They can't convert third downs at the pace they converted them last year. And they haven't played the same. And their defense has always been a defense that needs turnovers. It's always given you yards. They gave up 613 yards in the Super Bowl in 26 minutes. They won that game because they were able to force turnovers. This year, they've only forced 2 turnovers at home. That's not good. So I think it's going to be challenging to turn it around unless they get Tim Jernigan back, and he ignites this defensive front. Their secondary is so bad right now, I don't know if they can cover anybody.
All right, meanwhile, the Chicago Bears have mastered the art of playing from in front. Obviously, they have that tremendous defense. They got a good script of first 15 plays. Is that a team that you believe can win in the playoffs? We all have our questions about Trubisky's decision-making, his second, third reads, throwing the ball downfield, but they seem to hide it with his athleticism and playing from in front.
Well, look, I think that's what they did. I mean, last night his feet were the really difference in the game. He moved around the pocket. Before the game, he ran 41 times. He was their second leading rusher on the team. So, you know, you've got to control him in the pocket, and that's a hard thing to do for most teams. Most teams don't practice defensive line rush. I think when you saw the Patriots game, they didn't do a very good job, but they took away pretty much his first read, and I think that's what teams will keep doing to Mitchell. Last night, I mean, they won in spite of his ability to not really throw the ball for 169 yards. Had 2 turnovers. The game was right there for the Vikings. The Vikings offensively just did not know or understand how to attack the Bears' defense, and I think it cost them. They're going to have to play much better offensively if they're going to move along because their defense isn't as good as it was last year. Every 1st and 10, the Bears were in 2nd and 6. They were able to control the line of scrimmage, but I think the Bears, when they play against these better teams that can move the football, the Rams, the Saints, like New England could, I think they're in trouble because they'll know how to attack their defense, and I'm not sure their offense can keep pace.
All right, let's go to the other side, the Minnesota Vikings. Mike Zimmer was asked about why the continual errors, holding on to the football, and he can't really explain it. It feels like their offense should be better than it was last year, but it's not better than it was last year. What's your take on the Vikings and their struggles?
You know, I think the Vikings are one of those teams that want to do everything, and they're not doing anything very well. I think what they really need to do is focus on getting better and getting back to what they want to become. They don't have an identity. Right now, they just try to run a bunch of plays, and they're trying to run beaters as opposed to really systematically attacking a defense. And I think sometimes when you change coordinators and coordinators start to read that their names are in the paper for head coaching jobs, all of a sudden, you know, are you trying to win the game or are you trying to promote yourself to become a head coach? And I think that's the challenge that Minnesota faces. They've got to get back to what their roots are, which is clearly they've got to run the ball more effectively. They've got to run play action. That's what Cousins does well. And they haven't been able to do that. And I think they really need that. I think the Tony Sparano death, unfortunately, I think that's hurt them. They haven't been as good in the offensive line as they were last year. It was never mentioned last night. But I do think it's a concern.
Michael Lombardi joining us in the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. There's a lot of belief in Washington in Colt McCoy, right? Like they believe in him. They believe he's maybe not a Pro Bowl level starter, but can be a starter. They also believe in their system above all else. Are they wrong to believe that Colt McCoy can see this thing through and get them to the playoffs?
Look, I actually wrote today for The Athletic that they're better off with Colt McCoy. I hated to see what happened to Alex Smith. That was a gruesome injury, and I don't wish anyone to get hurt. But the one thing the Redskins had proven over 10 games is they weren't going to change their offense for Alex Smith. Alex Smith is successful running the Utah college offense that Andy Reid basically stole from Urban Meyer and installed in Kansas City. I called it West Coast College. That's what they ran. Alex Smith ran it to perfection. But in Washington, they expected him to run their stuff. He doesn't run their stuff as well. Colt McCoy, however, does. And I think they'll actually be a little bit better in the passing game. Remember, the last three games of the season, Alex Smith has thrown for exactly 179 yards in each of those last three games he's played in, not counting yesterday. So they're going to get more from their passing game. They cannot rely on Adrian Peterson. They're going to have to win the old-fashioned way, which is good defense, make a few plays in the passing game, keep the games in the low in the high teens, low 20s, and try to win it that way.
Let's get ready for tonight. You have the Chiefs. I mean, look, it's easy to say, hey, the Chiefs have no defense, and they have a spectacular offense. Is it as simple as that, or is their defense a little bit better? Is their defense improving at all?
Well, I think their defense is situational. I think they're really good on third down. I think they can take the ball away, and I think they've got moments where they can rush the passer. So I think they're a situational defense. I think this whole notion that great defenses exist. I mean, even the Bears. I mean, the Patriots moved the ball down the field on the Bears' defense when they played them. If you know how to attack a defense, you're going to score points based on the rules. And so I think what Kansas City has to do is play from in front and utilize their skill to rush their passer. Justin Houston, D. Ford, those guys. And then they play really good on third down, and that's how they've gotten off the field. I think that's their only chance. And the running game certainly helps because they play less defense. When you're not good on defense, Doug, it's always best to play less defense. Another point the Eagles mastered last year. They averaged 26.5 minutes of defense last year. That's why they were so good. These teams are copying that.
Let's go to the other side, the Rams. They've had some injuries of late. But, you know, Cooper Kupp is, it's not like you're losing Todd Gurley. What are your feelings? But on the other hand, their defense last year seemed to be picked apart more as the year went on. Granted, their personnel is better this year. You got Marcus Peters, who you feel like he's going to try and make a play tonight because that's, one, what he does, and two, going against the Chiefs who traded him away. They, knowing that, they're probably going to go after him because other teams have gone after the fact that he wants to be a ball hawk. Give me your sense of the Rams' defense today.
Well, I think this. I think that they're going to go after Marcus Peters with double moves. I mean, that's why they traded him. They know Marcus Peters wasn't disciplined in their scheme. He gave up as many plays as he stopped them, and I think they'll go after him. I think the key for the Rams is, and this is the key for Wade Phillips' defense, you've got to be able to stop the run. Wade Phillips' call sheet shrinks enormously when he can't stop the run. He can't do the things he wants to do to stop your passing game when you're running the ball at him. He can't get into his nickel. He can't get into his situational defenses. And until they stop that, teams are going to keep moving the ball. Last week, the Seattle Seahawks only threw the ball for 140 yards, but, man, they ran it for over 200. If that happens tonight, they'll lose badly.
How have we gotten into this thing where coaches are like, ah, screw it, let's just go for two? Like Ron Rivera, and anybody falling back on the Riverboat Ron excuse, like, okay, maybe that's the guy he had been when they went to a Super Bowl. But they were better. They're a better football team than the Detroit Lions. The Lions had lost Kerryon Johnson, and both teams, unless you give up a touchdown, both teams get the ball. Like, why is he? Why he's like cheapening how good his team is to me by going for two? I know Gano had missed an extra point, missed a field goal. I understand, but I felt like you're cheapening, you're selling your team short by going for two. You're not the inferior team.
I mean, Gano's perfect from outside of 40 yards. He hasn't missed an outside of 50-yard kick. He hasn't missed an outside of 40. He had a bad couple kicks. And I think, you know, you're right. I mean, look, I hate this whole notion that we're going to lay our blood and guts on the field for 59 minutes and have the game come down to just one play. I mean, that's not really smart. And I think the longer that game went, the Panthers had a better chance. Now, if you would have told me he onside kicked it after he tied the score 20-20, I might accept that. But to me, the Lions still had two timeouts left. There was a minute to go. Matt Prater's a long-range field goal kicker. Even if you get the two-point conversion, Doug, there's no guarantee you're going to win the game. So why not change the way you're playing? I wrote about this today. If you tie the score 20-20, the Lions take a different approach. The Lions take the approach of, okay, we want to be careful, we want to be cautious with the ball, but yet we want to try to get in the field goal range. We don't want to go three incomplete passes and out and give the ball back to the Panthers. So maybe we'll start running the ball a little bit. Be very careful. But if you're down 21-20, if the Lions were down and you made that 2-point, the Lions say, hell with it. We're going to throw caution to the wind. We're going to throw the ball. We're going to do whatever it takes to get the field goal range. Different mentality, you see? And so you've got to play those conditions. And I think if you tie the score, the Lions play it differently. I think if you win, even if you get it, the Lions play it differently, and you end up losing. I didn't like it at all.
Look, I think we all knew that James Conner's ceiling was lower than Le'Veon Bell. they escaped Pittsburgh in what was an incredible finish to a football game. But do the Steelers, do they come up short on talent once it gets to real football, once it gets to January, and we're trying to get to a Super Bowl, because they've used Connor so much, and he's no matter how good he is or how much better he is than we thought he'd be, he's not Le'Veon Bell.
Well, not, but I mean, that game really was, Ben didn't play very well, and thank God they were playing Blake Bortles, because I'm not sure I've seen every Blake Bortles game. I've not seen a Blake Bortles game that he didn't throw an interception and that he played that poorly. I mean, that was a game where Jacksonville basically was saying to everybody, we're not going to let our quarterback participate. We are just not going to let him beat us today. They were two plays and runs, crossers. They never wanted him to beat it, and he still lost the game for him. He takes two bad sacks when they were in field goal range late in the fourth quarter. They had 4 3-and-outs in that game in the fourth quarter. They never converted a third down in the fourth quarter because they were too scared to let their quarterback play in the game. And that's the reason why Pittsburgh won. Big Ben didn't play well. James Conner dropped a pass on a wheel route that could have won the game earlier than when Roethlisberger got it in. But when you play a team like Jacksonville who doesn't want their quarterback to participate, you're going to be able to stay in the game. And it proves the point that no matter how good you are on defense, you can't play great for 60 minutes. And I think that's why they won.
Fantastic stuff. Michael Lombardi. The book is Gridiron Genius, a masterclass in winning championships and building dynasties in the NFL. It's on sale now. The podcast is GM Street. Download it and buy the book. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Doug.